Hey, this is James Cratch, Giants beat writer for the Star Ledger and NJ.com, and you are listening to JK, but seriously, Real Football Injury Talk.
Thanks for tuning in to an all-new episode of the Heads and Tails Fantasy Football Injury Report, minus the fantasy football relevance, because it's no longer relevant, but we're still talking about the injuries, just trying to start a conversation to make the sport of football safer to play. In today's lineup, what we got? We got the Week 17 injuries. Then we have a little discussion on the college football targeting rule and how I've kind of witnessed in some of the bowl games that it's effective, in my opinion. Then we got some NFL prospects skipping out on bowl games and, you know, for health and safety reasons. And then we're going to get into Josh's wild card playoff round previews of all the NFL games. And we'll have try to get the audience's opinion on that. So stay tuned on Instagram to cast your vote. So Josh, thanks for coming and helping me find my wallet, because that was about an hour long struggle, even with a tile.
It's key.
So thank you for that.
Welcome.
And let's start off with the Week 17 injuries. We got LeSean McCoy, the running back for Buffalo, with an ankle injury.
This is probably the biggest injury of Week 17 from a player standpoint, biggest name player. The running back for the Bills, LeSean McCoy, got an ankle injury. We'll talk about the significance to the team more when we talk about the Bills-Jags playoff game here at the end of the episode. But he was just a regular carry up the middle, 4 or 5 yard carry. And usually when you think of these ankle injuries, they're the ones that you get like trapped and twisted and looks like just a badly sprained ankle. This one, his toe is on the ground, his heel is up in the air. So his foot's like perpendicular to the ground, and the defensive lineman who's tackling him falls on top of him that way. So it looks like his foot ankle gets kind of compressed, because it never really gets like really turned or twisted. It does a little bit, but it's not like your basketball rolled ankle, or he's making a cut and he rolls his ankle like you kind of picture. So it is.
It's just like hinging the wrong way.
Yeah. So it kind of makes me think that it isn't as bad as.
He wasn't putting weight on it.
He got carted off the field. So, but they did x-rays. All the x-rays were negative. All the MRIs came back fine. So they said he's got a chance to play this weekend, which would be really big for the Bills. But based on how it doesn't look like your normal sprained ankle, I would think that even though it looked really bad at the time and it looks bad on the video, he might have a shot to play.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah, and like we said, we'll talk more about it when we talk about the game, but the Bills probably need him if they have any shot.
Okay. Next injury up is Marquise Goodwin, wide receiver for San Francisco. He had a pretty bad concussion. And obviously go to the show notes for this episode to find the video of this hit. Josh, you want to explain it to us?
Yeah, so he was, again, and we've talked about this all year, a lot of these, I would say a good percentage of these defenseless receiver hits that result in concussions are where? On the field.
In the secondary?
Yeah, but like where on the, like in
the, oh, near the end zone.
Near the end zone, which is exactly the same. So we talked about the Robert Woods, remember when the Rams and the 49ers played on Thursday night at the very beginning of the year, and the 49er guy crushed the Robert Woods on like the very similar play,
right?
Slant down by the goal line.
Also against the Rams?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this was the team's flipped. Now the 49ers wide receiver running a slant by the goal line, 5 yard line, safety comes up, hits him in the helmet, more so with his shoulder. It wasn't helmet to helmet, but the reaction to this, not really the reaction, his physical reaction.
Bizarre.
Marcus Goodwin's physical reaction was bizarre, to say the least.
It was like a delay, like, whoa!
Yeah, like, it's hard to explain. You got to kind of see the video, but so he gets hit, and he's on the ground, and the one guy on Twitter described it like, it looked like he was trying to catch the ball again. So he's laying flat on his back, and like, he's almost in fencing, like the fencer's pose, and then all of a sudden he like spasms and his arms are like flailing in the air like he's trying to catch something. So it was,
and then he's just like out,
and then after that he went back to like out. Yeah, so it was a scary one. But like I said, it's a lot of these things are down by the goal line because it's when there's points get involved, they don't, you don't, it seems like the defenders especially are a lot less careful. And the thought, it seems like at other parts of the field, we were finally starting to see like it run through the defender's mind, which I don't know if they like or not, or they'll admit, but I think I've seen a lot more of guys pulling up on plays across the middle where there could have been contact on purpose or even right. on accident, just because of the how the play goes. But down by the end zone, it's like you got to make a play. It seems like it just becomes a lot more instinctual because
you're gonna get your ass chewed out if you don't.
And you're trying to save points. Yeah. And it's like it's the biggest thought. And it's been a lot of situations and scenarios where there's been head contact because of that.
Yeah, and one more point on this particular hit is, you know, the defender obviously led with his shoulder technically, but it kind of leads me to, you know, believe that I think some of these guys use the leading with the shoulder as like an excuse or like a crutch for hitting a defenseless receiver, because your shoulder can still be a weapon. You know, I think it's still a violent weapon that you can use, and I don't know, I feel like these guys might be taking advantage of that, or not taking advantage of it, but I don't know, falsely misled that is an okay thing to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's the fact that, and it's hard because the way the rule's written, I mean, now you can, obviously he got penalized for it, so you can still be penalized just because it's not helmet to helmet, it's shoulder to helmet. It's like if you watch this isn't, it's another example of, it's not a normal tackling
technique.
Yes, it's not. It's like
launch.
It's a lead with a shoulder. Like you can hit with your shoulder if you're trying to tackle like you would normally. I mean, these pass breakups are lead with the hardest thing I have, because that's the best chance you're gonna have to break up the ball. And when the target changes, or yeah, of course he doesn't mean to hit him in the head with his shoulder, but when the ball's thrown poorly, or the ball's thrown in a different location, and the guy dives or goes down to catch it, now you're leading with the hardest thing you have. There's a shot you're going to hit him in the head.
Yeah, you don't have control anymore.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Next injury up is DeAnthony Thomas, wide receiver / kick returner for Kansas City, with a broken tibia.
Yeah, so this one has some playoff implications too. Chiefs are playing this weekend in the wild card round. He's their main kickoff and punt returner. Now that they don't, like, since Tyreek Hill's been more of a wide receiver this year, they took him off all that stuff, so things like this don't happen to him since he's their number one receiver now. But he was returning a punt in the game this weekend against the Broncos, and it's another one where it looks like a pretty normal tackle, just to be honest. He's trying to run away from the defender. The defender has him by the waist and is just
from behind him.
Yeah, so he's
it's like a horse collar type injury.
Kind of, yeah. It's a similar mechanic to how when that's kind of why they took horse collars out, because you get your legs trapped because the guy's behind you. So this, he just had his arms around his waist, but the defender is basically being dragged on the ground, and the body weight of him on his legs just gets caught the wrong way, and he got his foot caught underneath basically, and broke his leg. So he's obviously out for the entirety of the playoffs.
Another injury is Robbie Anderson, wide receiver for the New York Jets, with a concussion.
And this one to me was pretty bad, just because it looked
shoulder again, but blatant going for the head. Yeah,
and this strikes me as one of these ones where, especially with wide receiver corner back matchups, and a lot of times where a lot of these corners in the NFL, they follow the wide receiver. So basically, wherever the wide receiver lines up, especially the best wide receiver on a team, like Robbie Anderson is for the Jets, the best corner on the Patriots is a lot of times going to shadow him and go wherever he goes, where he is on the field, and cover him on every single play. So a lot of times, I mean, you're lining up against this guy for 60, 70 plays, you're going to be jawing back and forth at each other. And a lot of wide receivers and corners, that's what they like to do. That's a lot of part of their game, they feel like, which gives them advantage of psychologically beating the other guy, letting the guy know when you make a play. So this just strikes me as one where I think the corner for the Patriots felt he had a chance to get a free shot on him,
right?
Without not in the course of play. And I'm sure he didn't mean to be like to have what happened, but I think he meant to let him know he was there,
right,
and give him a little extra shot. But it ended up being shoulder right to helmet. He got a concussion. He left the game. And Robbie Anderson got up immediately and tried to get in. Gilmore's face about it.
Well, yeah, it's freaking BS.
Yeah, it was a pretty blatantly dirty.
Yeah, because like not only did Robbie Anderson not see him coming, which is almost like a defenseless type receiver, but he also wasn't going to catch the ball.
No,
like,
he didn't catch the ball, and the hit was late. It was right around the Jets' own goal line, and it was almost like a little screen pass. And Anderson reached out to catch it with one hand, dropped it, and then almost just like bent down to kind of pick it up off a bounce, just as like a reaction to dropping a ball, kind of.
Right.
And Gilmore was coming, so
eyeing him up the whole way.
Yeah. So Anderson's running towards the sideline. Gilmore's running straight down towards the
downhill,
goal line.
Yeah.
And once he sees it, he didn't catch the ball, and he kind of just like gives him like a flying elbow going by as he's running past him. But since Anderson kind of bent down, he hit him elbow top of his arm.
But it
right
wasn't like I'm standing straight up, now I'm bending down.
He was already bent down.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I'd be interested to see if he won't get suspended, but he should be fined.
Why shouldn't he be suspended?
He won't get suspended.
Right.
I'll phrase it that way.
He won't
get suspended.
I mean, like, to me, that's not much different than Gronk's
It's not a football. It's just one of those things. It's not really a football play. Like, these are the ones that we kind of talked about throughout the course of the year that you should be able to get rid of because it's not in the course of a normal football move or play.
Think about Gronk's suspension.
Yes. The contact itself is very similar.
Right.
But Gronk's was a lot later.
I know it was a lot later, but it was still a guy not looking for you, doesn't know you're there, and you like blatantly go for his head.
Yeah.
You know? Just food for thought. All right. I think that's it for the major injuries from week 17. Now we'll go into a little bit of a discussion from weeks past. And the Texans did not get fined for their handling of the Tom Savage concussion, and it did lead to changes in the NFL concussion protocol, which we touched on last week. So go over to the show notes for week 16 for the week 16 injury report to hear about some of those changes. Anything else you want to add to that? Or
The article that we have for this week is it also outlines the changes that we touched on last week, and also just briefly touching on it is the things that they ended up changing were things that they should have had the whole time.
Right.
Because based on what happened and
– Oh, now
and
like, if you have a seizure on the field, now you should be taken off. Yeah.
You don't play.
Yeah. But before, you didn't.
But based on how it was written, I mean, the Texans technically didn't do anything wrong. People gave him a lot of crap for it, for letting him go back in the game, but –
Yeah, by the rules.
But, yeah, letter of the law, they follow the rules. So that's why they didn't get fined and why the Seahawks did. But even though they change it, it'll still be interesting to see going forward how teams respond to it and how teams actually put it into action when it's called upon, especially in the playoffs. The playoffs is a whole different animal. Like we saw, I think we talked about this once or twice this year, the Matt Moore hit last year, quarterback for the Dolphins in the Steeler game, where he got helmet-to-helmet, personal foul hit against, and he was back in a play later. It was very similar to what happened with Russell Wilson, and nothing ended up happening to the Dolphins because of it. But in a playoff game, when your quarterback – these guys are trying to get him back in the game as quick as he can. So it'll be interesting to see if we have any scenarios like that this year with playoffs and concussion protocol and how the teams handle it.
Then we have a hometown fan topic. The Steelers, among other teams, resting their starters to avoid injury in week 17.
Yeah, I guess the Steelers were the biggest team, but a lot of other teams did also. I guess the difference was the Steelers still technically had something to play for, but they had a bye already. They were only playing for the difference of being the one seed or the two seed. But in order for them to get the one seed, the Patriots would have had the loss to the Jets, which
probably wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I think they kind of knew wasn't going to happen, and they had their chance to be the one seed when they played the Patriots.
So who didn't play for the?
Ben Roethlisberger was inactive. Le'Veon Bell was inactive. Pouncey was inactive. their center.
So who the hell was running the ball? Because isn't James Conner hurt?
Yeah,
too?
They signed Stephen Ridley last week, before last week's game. He played for the Patriots for a couple of years, on the Jets for like a hot second. And he actually did okay. He had a touchdown.
On the Pittsburgh Steelers for a hot second.
Yeah, now he's their backup running back, and he got some run. But yeah, so they sat basically. I mean, you can only sit seven guys. You can only not dress seven guys. But they're and they only had one guy who was inactive because of injury. So they didn't. They basically didn't dress their most. And Antonio Brown obviously is still hurt because of injury. So they didn't dress a lot of guys.
Any news on Antonio Brown?
He started running this week. So it kind of. I'm still skeptic of it, but I guess we'll have a lot more information come this time next week when they're preparing for whoever they're going to prepare for. But just interesting to see how different teams approach these last week, with depending on what they have on the line and the teams that are preparing for the playoffs. I know the Rams didn't play their starting quarterback. The Eagles played Foles for about a quarter and a half, and then took him out of the game. Whereas the Patriots played everybody the whole game. I mean, they were up on the Jets 26-3 in the fourth quarter, and Brady's still in the game with 5 minutes left, and Gronkowski and Deion Lewis. So I guess every team kind of approaches it a little differently, but and every team's had success some certain ways. I remember when Peyton Manning was on the Colts, and when we were growing up, probably in middle school, there was years where they had the one seed clinched like the week before Christmas. So they're in week 15 and they have nothing to play for. They had home field advantage, and sometimes they decide to rest their guys, and then they get into playoffs and these guys haven't played for 3 weeks now. And then they start to show a little slower. Yeah. They'll start to show a little signs of rust. So to me, I guess it's, depending on your team, it depends on your situation, depends on your depth, but at least with your quarterback and with the Steelers, like with Bell, I mean, if you have a chance to ensure that those guys are going to be healthy, and maybe it's just going to take them an extra drive or two to be full speed in their first playoff game,
deal with it.
Yeah, man.
It's better than not having them at all.
Yeah, figure it out. You got to get these games as healthy as you possibly can. So, but it was, to me, it was just interesting to see how different teams handled it.
Yeah, on a similar but not NFL-specific note, a bunch of draft-eligible NFL prospects in college were skipping their team's bowl games to ensure that they don't get hurt or that they don't hurt their draft stock.
They're not hurt your draft stock by getting hurt. They're not afraid of having a bad game.
Right.
But they're afraid of having a serious injury. And we've seen it a couple times in the past couple years. We'll have a link to the Jake Butt Players Tribune article
from last year.
He was a tight end from Michigan,
projected second
like
round.
Second round pick. Yeah, one of the top tight ends at his position. He tore his ACL in the bowl game last year, so he ended up getting picked in.
Didn't he have like insurance on his legs or something?
A lot of these guys do, but still, it's.
I'm almost positive that he had insurance that like he got paid pretty heftily for having that insurance or whatever.
But at the same time, if you have a year injury in a bowl game in January, most of the time you're gonna miss a full season. So he ended up getting drafted by the Broncos in I think the fifth round. He didn't play a game this year. He had got put on IR at the end of the season, and he didn't play a single game. And he should be good to play next year, but that's just kind of the risk you run. There was a linebacker who ended up coming back and playing this year for the Cowboys, Jalen Smith, who was the Notre Dame linebacker, who was one of the top 10 prospects in the draft, and he blew out everything in his knee. And I think the Cowboys ended up picking him in the second round, and he missed all of last year. This was his second year in the league and his first season playing. So, I mean, you see it happen a lot. And last year was the first season that guys started skipping the bowl game. So I guess the big names were Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette, who are rookies in the NFL this year. Last bowl season, didn't play in their bowl games. Their teams weren't in the college football playoff games. So they were in just regular bowl games, and they decided they knew they were going to be top 15, top 10 picks, and they decided they weren't going to play. So it seems to be more the skill guys that are doing it more so than anybody else. But it's just – I don't know if I'd feel differently if I was on the team, because – on one hand, yeah, you want them to you want your teammates to play, and these guys are the best players on the team, obviously, if they're going to get drafted that highly. But at the same time, you know these guys so well that it's like you're probably like, if I was in his boat, I might be doing it too. So, yeah. What do you think about it?
Yeah, it's hard to put yourself in someone else's shoes, but I'm always in the camp of get the money while you can. And, you know, because you're not guaranteed tomorrow. So I don't blame these guys one bit for sitting out their bowl game. And I'm sure it eats at them more than you would think it does. Like, it might seem to an outsider that, oh, like, they just didn't care about their team. They're selfish. They only care about themselves. But you got to know, making that decision, like, you're going to catch some flack for it, and it's a hard decision for you in general because those are your buddies. Those are the guys that you were recruited with and you fought with on the field. So you don't want to let them down either. So I'm sure, you know, as mad as it makes the fans and maybe irritate some of your coaches and your teammates, I think people should know that it probably – it's just as hard for the player themselves to make that decision.
Like I said, and everybody has a different approach to it. And in the Jake Butt article, he basically said there was no way that I wasn't going to play.
Yeah.
Just for whatever his own personal reasons.
And yeah, well, is that a – but who's to say that's a good, the right or the wrong decision?
No, it's just
– For him, the right decision. Yeah.
And Saquon Barkley was kind of in a similar – he's a running back for Penn State and probably the best running back in college football this year, and he decided to play. And Penn State's approach was, okay, so he wants to play, and James Franklin said, okay, we're going to play you. Well, we're not going to play you as much as we usually do. I mean, he usually plays every snap of every offensive possession.
Like 8 carries for like 90-something yards or something?
In the first half. I mean, he had a 92-yard touchdown run in the first half. So he ended up with his normal stat line, but they gave him drives off. And it's good for the team, too, because they had a younger running back who's going to be their starter next year that they can see in a big game and in a lot of important situations. But when it came to the fourth quarter and the game was close, he was playing every snap. But at the same time, I think the head coaches of these college teams and the college programs have started also kind of seeing the light and saying, okay, this guy wants to play, but I mean, he's going to be a top 5 pick. So we'll let him play, but instead of giving him 35 carries in the last game, we're going to give him 17, 18 carries and just minimize the chance of getting – because at the same time, like how bad would James Franklin feel as the head coach of Penn State if he's given Saquon Barkley 39 carries and on his 40th carry, he blows his knee out?
Yeah, I was just thinking the same exact thing. I'm like, from a recruiting standpoint, you have a top running back prospect coming in and he remembers that last season you freaking ran him into the ground and he tore his ACL. Like, I'm not coming to your school.
Yeah.
You don't care about me. So yeah.
So it's obviously they're at the same time when these guys who are these uber prospects are deciding that they do play, I think they're also doing right by the kid a lot of times. So, but it didn't seem to be nearly as a big of a talking point this year as it was last year. Last year,
it's becoming more acceptable.
Yeah, I think so. It's been, there's more guys doing it. Last year, a lot of guys came out and had such negative things to say about McCaffrey and Fournette, but it didn't change where they got drafted. You know, it didn't change what NFL teams viewed of their character.
No.
And I think it's becoming more.
In my mind,
acceptable.
That's the smart thing to do. And if I had the choice, if I was in their shoes, I'm sure I'd make the same exact decision.
Yeah.
Although I do think it would be a hard decision to make.
Yeah, for sure.
I also have the experience of, you know, having a career-ending injury.
Yeah.
So, all right, while we're still on the topic of college football, I just wanted to bring up a point when I'm watching all these bowl games yesterday and this weekend, the UCF game versus Auburn in particular. I just thought the targeting rule and the enforcement of the targeting rule was, like, on full display in every spectrum. I mean, I saw a targeting call, a reversal of a targeting call, which, you know, guys in college get ejected for if it truly is a targeting penalty, but they reviewed the tape, they saw that no, like it really wasn't a targeting penalty, and they picked up the flag and it was fine. Then in that same game, there was also a targeting ejection in that game, and they reviewed the tape and it was in fact targeting, and the player was ejected for it. And then also in this game, I saw on one particular play, I couldn't find a video of it, but because nothing really happened. But a defensive back clearly was holding up on a play like across the middle on wide receiver where he could have like depleted him, and he didn't. And the guy still went to the ground. It was still like the same result that would have happened, but this time like he didn't go for the kill shot and he stayed in the game because he didn't get a targeting penalty. So to me, it's kind of an example of how like the punishment might be fitting the crime in college football, and guys are starting to learn that it's not worth it to even like try to, you know, stick your nose in there when you don't really need to.
Yeah. Just based off of what I've seen from the college, I think they've also done a good job of, when they're reviewing it, reviewing intent also, which it's hard because like that's kind of a judgment call a lot of times. It's not, whereas everything in the NFL just seems to be so letter of the law, exactly how it's written. I mean, this targeting rule, it seems to give, it seems to be giving guys in college a little more leeway to make a judgment of, do you think the intent was X?
Right. Or, did you launch at him, yes, or did you really, yes, try to make a tackle?
Or was there helmet to helmet contact, but was it more inadvertent than anything else? Or was it crown of the helmet? You knew what you were doing, but crown of the helmet, you put yourself at risk of having this called on you.
And I also think situationally too, like I think where you are on the field could play a role, and the down and distance, and are you just trying to stop him from getting a first down? That's why you had the launch. Like,
yeah,
it's
for sure.
But I agree.
So it seems like there's a kind of groundswell of support or want for the NFL to adopt a rule like this. So
there's also money involved with the NFL
that there's not in
rules
college.
Where there's not in college. Exactly. Yes. So they might, like, what are you going to do? Like, he's ejected, but like, you're not going to have anyone appeal the ejection.
Yeah.
So, like,
because if you're getting ejected in the NFL, you're getting fined, and then they're going to appeal the fine. And then it's just, we've talked about this a little bit, but it seemed like the big emphasis this year was to try to, decrease the number of stoppages in the game. So if they're going to do targeting, are they going to make it where they have to review it? College games are long as shit already. You know, all these college games, these playoff games are 4 hours and 15 minutes, 4.5 hours. So them reviewing a targeting call that takes a minute, it is what it is. But I think the NFL is very aware and very cognizant of how long their games are and how many stoppages there are. So I'm very interested to see how the NFL kind of reacts to how they want to enforce a targeting rule or the defenseless receiver, because like you said, I think it is working in college because guys don't want to get ejected. And the other thing is, if you get ejected in the second half of a game, you miss the first half of the next game. So I do think it's in the back of these guys' minds in college a lot more so than it is in the NFL. But I'm interested to see what the NFL decides to do with it.
I mean, if the argument is that it's going to make the game longer, I mean, what's worse? I mean, we've been talking all season how the popular opinion is how the NFL isn't safe and that they don't care about the player's safety. So is adding an extra minute or two to the game for reviewing targeting penalties to make the game safer, is that, you know?
No, but we've also talked about where the NFL tries to please everybody. So this is one time where you're going to have to make a decision.
Yeah, pick one.
You know? So we'll see.
Pick the nearest threat.
I do think something will come up with it. Either it was not adopted because of X, or it is adopted and these are the rule changes.
Yeah, I feel like this offseason is going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. You also had an opinion on a slower whistle in the college game.
Yeah, so we're just real quick about, we're just watching all the college games. This is one thing that I do think the NFL has done a better job of in college. So I'm kind of in the NFL's corner on this one thing for once. Watching the college games, it seems like the referees are very letter of the law in terms of forward progress, and you're not down until you're down. So there's a lot of times, especially on these running plays, where they'll get caught in a pile, and there's like 10 guys coming into the pile and trying to push it. It becomes like a rugby scrum, and the refs like slowly make their way closer to the pile, but they don't blow their whistle until the guy is literally off his feet and on the ground.
Right, and in that UCF-Auburn game, there's a guy on Auburn who literally pile drove the UCF running back on his head. Like, he's lucky he didn't break his neck, this kid.
Yeah.
You know, putting all his weight on there, and that's all because it was a late whistle. Like, if the guy is in the air being bear hugged into, like, his feet are off the ground, like, he's obviously not moving anywhere. Blow the freaking whistle.
Yeah, and that's what I noticed, that the college refs are, and maybe they're coached this way, or I'm sure they're not doing it on purpose. I'm sure it's the way that they've been told, but they do not blow the whistle until the guy is down. But I saw a lot of times this weekend where I thought, if the play happened in the NFL, there would have been a flag. There probably would have been a flag because there would have been a quicker whistle. But just guys throwing themselves into piles, just the kind of unnecessary stuff that we've talked about that would like to see legislated out of the game, which I think the NFL, that's the one thing I think they have done a pretty good job on, is flagging guys for coming into piles late and leading with their helmet in that sense when it's just like a rugby scrum, the guy's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I agree. All right, now we're going to get to our wild card round preview games. You want to start off with the Tennessee Titans, Kansas City Chiefs game?
Yeah, so we'll go right in order on how their games are going to be on TV this weekend. I'm excited for the playoffs. I mean, as much crap as the NFL gets, the playoffs are still. I think the ratings came out for 2017, and of the top 30 television shows, the top 30 television shows on TV this past year of 2017, I think it said somewhat like 20 of them were NFL games. And every single playoff game from last year, from January of 2017, was in the top 30 of shows on TV. So, I mean, for as much crap as the NFL gets, everybody still watches the playoffs. It's the only game on. There's four of them the first 2 weeks, and there's two the next week, and then it's the Super Bowl. So everybody's watching them. So I'm excited to kind of break down and get in depth before the games and next week, next Monday, after the games. We only have four games to talk about, and it'll be good that I think we can take stuff from every single game and everyone will
know what we're talking about. Yeah.
So, but the first game on Saturday afternoon, 4:35, is Tennessee Titans at Kansas City Chiefs. From an injury standpoint, biggest injury in this game is probably DeMarco Murray, the running back for the Titans. We talked about him last week on the podcast. He got hurt week 16 against the Rams with a sprained knee. It wasn't as bad as they originally thought. He wasn't able to go last week, and they weren't saving him. They needed to win to make the playoffs, so he wasn't able to go. So it'll be interesting to see how that progresses throughout the course of this week to see if he can play. And just from a matchup standpoint, the Titans are a team that kind of had some high expectations this year and had a pretty good record at one point, but they really struggled down the stretch. They lost three games in a row before week 17 where they beat the Jaguars, but the Jaguars weren't playing for anything. That enabled them to get into the playoffs, and it seems like a lot of it is on their quarterback, Marcus Mariota, another guy who they had high expectations because everyone had high expectations of him, and he's turned the ball over a lot this year. He's been hurt a lot this year. He hasn't been really – I think his best asset is legs, and a lot of the year he hasn't really been able to use his legs. So it'll be an interesting matchup in that sense. And the Chiefs are a team that was 5-0 at the beginning of the year, and everybody's almost favorite to go to the Super Bowl when the Patriots were struggling at the beginning of the year and the Steelers were struggling at the beginning of the year. And the Chiefs came out and beat the Patriots, and they were scoring 30 points a game, and they looked great. And then they went through a stretch in the middle of the year where they lost the Giants and the Jets. And they went through a 1-6 stretch. But in the past couple of weeks, they've quietly, I think, started to right their ship and use the running game more. And kind of once the spotlight was off of them, I think they kind of were able to figure some stuff out. And I think they could be a scary team because I think they're starting to get confidence again. And they've kind of got over that hump of that lull that they had in the middle of the year. And I think a lot of people are underestimating them because I think people just assume that they're still the team that they were in the middle of the year when they were struggling.
Sounds like you got the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I would be, especially in Kansas City, I think I would be surprised if this game's a one-possession game in the fourth quarter. Because I mean, forever for the Chiefs, their problem was their problem has been really Alex Smith in big games. Is he going to be play well enough at quarterback to carry you over the hump? But I mean, even this year when they went through that 1-6 stretch, it was not Alex Smith. I mean, he was still playing really good football. It was more so on their defense and the coaching also. But I like the Chiefs, but it'll be interesting to see what happens in that game. So,
all right, next game we got is the Buffalo Bills at Jacksonville.
So this is the other AFC game. This is Sunday at 1:00. We have the Buffalo Bills at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Bills, the first time in the playoffs since 1999. They snapped.
Bills Mafia, dude.
They finally got in. They snapped the longest playoff drought in all of professional sports. They had gone the longest amount of time without appearing in a playoff game in any MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL.
Who's their quarterback?
Tyrod Taylor.
They put him back.
Yeah, he's been playing. He's gotcha. Played the last couple weeks. So Tyrod Taylor's their quarterback. So if you want to see a pretty cool video, so in order for the Bills to make the playoffs, they needed to win. They needed the Ravens to lose. So Bills win, Ravens lose. Bills are in the playoffs. So the Bills played the Dolphins. They won. And the Raven game was still going on. So there's a really good video of the Bills team in the locker room in Miami with the game on their little TV. And it's not like a big screen. It's just in their visiting locker room. So it's probably like a 30-inch TV. But the whole team's watching it. And the Ravens were losing all game. They came back. They were up by three. And the Bengals had 4th and 12 from the 50-yard line with 40 seconds left, no timeouts. And Andy Dalton threw a 20-yard little seam pass over the middle. Guy caught it, broke two tackles, scored a touchdown. So that's how the Bengals ended up winning the game. So there's the Bills social media guys have basically just the locker room, like a panel locker room. And I wouldn't say they were dejected, but everyone's like kind of biting their fingernails watching the game. And then you see the guy, you can tell the guy caught the ball, and then the guy scored the touchdown, and the locker room goes nuts.
I'll put that video up in the show
notes.
There's
guys crying. Like, it's pretty good.
That's cool.
It's a pretty good video. So it's good to see the Bills back in the playoffs. Unfortunately, if LeSean McCoy is not able to play, I don't know how much of a shot they really have. The Jaguars is probably the biggest surprise story of the whole year, and they've been carried by their defense. As long as Blake Bortles doesn't throw a 4-interception game up there and two of them get returned for touchdowns, which I think he's capable of doing, but he's been better than that for the last couple of weeks. As long as he manages the game and they give Fournette a bunch of carries, I think the Jaguars should be able to take this game and go to Pittsburgh next weekend. But the LeSean McCoy thing really hurts the Bills if he's not able to play. I mean, they run their entire offense through him. They throw him the ball. He runs the ball. He's one of the best backs in the whole league. So, and their backup running back is an undrafted guy who's been on a couple teams and never had one carry in the NFL until this past weekend after McCoy got hurt.
Oh, wow.
So, if McCoy's not able to go, I just can't see the Bills. Like I said, unless they get special teams and a defensive score or two, I can't see them putting up the points to kind of hang with Jacksonville.
Sounds like you're leaning towards Jacksonville.
Home team.
Okay. Then we got – who do you got for Atlanta Falcons at Los Angeles Rams?
So this is the Saturday primetime game, NFC games. The NFC playoffs are going to be really good. I mean, the six teams in the NFC playoffs are, I think, all very similar. And the most interesting thing, at least to me, is when you look at the starting quarterbacks on all of the NFC playoff teams, the teams who are playing this weekend on wildcard weekend have the more experienced, better, quote-unquote, quarterbacks in the playoffs. So whereas the teams with a bye, the Eagles and the Vikings, have the playoff inexperienced quarterbacks, they probably have the better teams overall. But, I mean, the Eagles who are sitting at home with a bye are going to have to go with Foles all playoffs, and the Vikings, for as good as Case Keenum has been all year, he's still Case Keenum, and he's never played in a playoff game. So, but whereas we have the NFC playoffs, at least in the wild card round, we got the Falcons, who are the 6th seed. They're at the Rams, who are the 3 seed. So we got Matt Ryan, and we got an unproven Jared Goff, but the Rams have kind of been that other surprise team. So this will be a good game because it's kind of the team who's been there before, Falcons, who were in the Super Bowl last year, against kind of the young upstart, young coach, young quarterback, surprise story of the league, like I said. The biggest injury really for me for this game is Julio Jones. It seems he's been banged up all year long.
And still performs, though.
He still does. It doesn't seem like – maybe it's because he's hurt, but they don't get him as involved as much as
– They got Sanu, dude.
Yeah, they got Sanu.
Rutgers guy.
But Julio Jones just doesn't seem to be as involved or as dominant as he was last year when they were going on their run. Maybe that's because he's a little banged up. And it just seems like once a game he's coming out because he's got a hip or a leg or a foot. And it seems like it kind of happens with those big physical receivers. They are getting some bumps and bruises. But and it kind of goes hand in hand with the whole Falcons offense. I mean, that was the biggest thing last year is they were scoring 35 points a game, and that's how they got to the Super Bowl. And I think everyone expected them to do the same thing this year, and they just haven't been able to mesh. Their running backs have been hurt off and on all year. Julio Jones has been hurt off and on all year, and they just – they have all the same guys. They have all the same pieces they did last year. It's just they haven't been able to figure it out. So I'm sure they think they'll be able to flip the switch and get to the playoffs. And I mean, if they score 30 points a game, they'll have a shot to get back to the Super Bowl. But they haven't been able to, they haven't showed that they're capable of doing it yet. So we'll see if the playoffs come and Matt Ryan can be the MVP Matt Ryan of last year, or if he's going to be the guy he's been all season long, which is a 17 to 20 point Falcon team, which wouldn't get him past this weekend.
All right, then we got our last game, the Carolina Panthers at New Orleans Saints.
So this is probably the best game of the weekend, and this is the other NFC wildcard game with the other two Super Bowl experienced quarterbacks. You got Cam on the Panthers and Drew Brees on the Saints. So I mean, all these teams playing in the NFC this weekend, they all got the quarterbacks to whoever wins these two games to go into the divisional round at an opposing team's field, and they've got the quarterbacks to have an upset. But so the Saints are at home. It's 4:30 on Sunday. The Saints beat the Panthers twice this year in the regular season. That's ended up really one of the bigger reasons why they ended up winning the division, even though these two teams ended up with the same record. So Alvin Kamara for the Saints is back from his concussion. He had two touchdowns last week, one of them being a kick return. So I think he's all good from that hit they took against the Falcons a couple weeks back that we talked about. And he's their biggest game changer. The offense has been significantly so much better since they traded Adrian Peterson. The first couple weeks they were trying to kind of force him in when they signed him in the offseason before they drafted Kamara. And ever since they traded AP and they've just been rolling with Kamara and Ingram, their offense has been running on all cylinders almost. And since Greg Olsen's come back, the other biggest injury.
With his foot.
Yeah, ever since he's came back with his foot, he missed 8 weeks and they came back, played one game, missed another game. But ever since then, he's been playing, and he kind of holds their whole offense together for the Panthers. So
I think the refs missed a helmet-to-helmet hit on Greg Olsen this past week, and he was, like, livid.
He was pissed.
He was so mad, yeah. He said something about, they hit me in the explicitive face.
Yeah. I didn't see that one.
Yeah, he was, like, screaming. I wish I could – I'll try to find it. I doubt I will, but –
But I honestly, I think this is the most even matchup of the whole weekend. The Saints being at home, I think, will help. New Orleans is a tough place to play, especially in the playoffs. But it's an interesting matchup of the most exciting thing to watch, if you can take anything out of this game, is watching the two rookie running backs and how they're used by each team. Watch how the Saints use Kamara, especially out of the backfield, and watch how the Panthers use Christian McCaffrey, especially out of the backfield. They're two smaller receiving type backs, but they'll both get some carries.
I might be mistaken, but doesn't Kamara, he runs pretty hard, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's like known for like getting after a little bit.
No, he does, but
McCaffrey doesn't do that. He just like
not as much, no.
Yeah.
But they'll still give him some carries, but they're very creative in how they're used and how they get the ball in these guys' hands. And I think that's the future wave of running backs, especially with a lot of how offenses are run in college and how much success that these guys have had in the NFL this year. We've talked about it this year. You don't see a lot of Le'Veon Bell type one back offenses. And these two guys are perfect two back complement running backs, where the Panthers use Jonathan Stewart a lot also, and the Saints use Mark Ingram a lot also. So you have two kind of opposing styles of two different running backs, but I think you see more and more running backs who have the ability to be split out, and when they're faced up against a linebacker, to have a really big advantage, and teams you look to exploit that. So that's what we got for the playoffs this weekend. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, well, Josh, thanks for the breakdown of the games, and now I know who I'm going to pick in my picks for the weekend. And for those listening, keep a good radar on our Instagram account to put in your vote. Anything else, Josh?
That's it.
All right, we'll see you next week after the playoff games.